Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Boost Analytics. Boost is a one-of-a-kind technology company that provides NBA caliber analytics and video analysis to a select number of men's and women's Division I basketball programs. Boost uses artificial intelligence and natural language technologies to make analytics more user-friendly, translate complex data into easy-to-read coaching insights. The Boost platform was built by data scientists and basketball experts with decades of experience at both the collegiate and NBA levels. To learn more about Boost and how your team can gain a competitive edge, head on over to their website at www.boostsport.ai and join the fastest growing team in college basketball analytics. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, we have a special guest today, all the way halfway across the world, Chris Thiessen, all the way out in Tokyo, Japan. He's currently a counselor at international school. He's a head coach at St. Mary's in Tokyo, and he also has his own club slash, if you call it an AAU team, Tokyo Samurai Basketball. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome to have you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you over the last month or so, and I'm excited to continue to build our relationship. I know you're a Rising Coaches member, and tell us a little bit about why you joined Rising Coaches, and then you can kind of dive into your story and go from there.
Sure. I think like a lot of people during the pandemic, we didn't have lots of things to do. And I heard about Rising Coaches. And, for me, like being international in Japan, I mean, I'm from the States, but I've been in Japan for 15 years, and to kind of be able to network and connect with coaches really appealed to me. And they had, the two coaches a month kind of thing going on. And I wanted to kind of expand my network of coaches just to, throw some ideas around, but also, a big part of what we do as a club for us is to try to get kids recruited, and I wanted to kind of, build some relationships with coaches that, that they would, we send mass emails out, but they would actually trust kind of what I'm saying, when I say, hey, there's a kid from Japan that wants to play basketball in the US, and a lot of coaches are going like, what's coming out of Japan, but we've, so it was great for me to kind of be able to find just different coaches to kind of connect with. And there's a number of coaches through Rising Coaches that I've, built some relationships with. And I continually still now just text with them and kind of catch up with what they're doing.
That's awesome. Technology has made it so accessible. And like you said, during the pandemic, things like Zoom and podcasts and virtual clinics became more of the norm, and glad you were able to take advantage of it. So tell us about your basketball journey, or at least, how you got to where you are and how you, how you're a head coach and a club coach and all those combined and another job, and you travel, and tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, there's lots to it. I'll go back to where just moving to Japan. I moved to Japan, like I said, I think 16 years now. And I came to teach English. My mother's Japanese. I was born in Japan, but I grew up in California. We left when I was two, so my mother didn't speak Japanese to me, and I didn't really learn it. So I was in college. I started to try to learn it, and decided to come out here and just do what people do to get here, just teach English. And so I did that for a year, and that was some tough work because I was working with like little kids from babies in the womb to 18-year-olds. So it was an interesting experience. And then I moved on. I had some background in working with kids with autism. So that was kind of building my background with counseling, things like that. And I got hooked up with a school, and they wanted to hire me because I had a counseling background prior when I was in the States. And it was kind of a small school, like an alternative school, that you have in the US of kids that don't quite kind of fit into this, the other international schools. And there were a few kids there that wanted to play basketball. And I had, basketball knowledge. And so I said, well, let's, the school had no sports program. So I said, well, let's try to, put something together and throw a team together. And one of the kids was actually, he lived in Hawaii. He was Japanese, but lived in Hawaii. He went to Punahou. He was pretty good. And so let's try to get this together, and at that point, my coaching experience was probably like third and fourth grade basketball when I was in high school. I did some volunteer stuff like that. So jump in this league and there's a bunch of other schools, maybe six or seven other schools that are kind of similar size, and, you know, just try to figure it out. Lucky enough, like, we won the championship that year, you know, and then just like, I was like, okay, this is kind of fun. You know, I'm interested in it, you know, and you know, I love the basketball. So it wasn't like it was something completely new. Just the coaching side was, and, eventually I moved to St. Mary's, which is where I'm at now. And, they had both varsity and JV coaching position available. And I just said, I'll take whatever you would give me. I'm there to learn. And so they took me on as the JV coach. And, I mean, we had some kids that had a little bit of talent, and, you know, the school itself, you know, it's about 1,000 students, K-12, all boys. But the high school is about 250. And so within the league itself out here, within the international schools, you know, there's the bigger schools, at least in Tokyo, there's, you know, three or four of them. And there's, you know, three military schools. So we've got Army, Navy, and Air Force that are out here with their own military bases. And they have, you know, obviously the kids living kind of that American high school experience out here. And so made it through our first year, and, you know, I'd networked some people, and we decided to start kind of like a summer basketball for our St. Mary's International School, which was what hadn't been done. And we kind of got hooked up with some other schools that decided they wanted to do it too, because there's just an interest in having more basketball. And then I got invited that, you know, I think it was my first summer to, someone had brought out, I don't know if you know Dave Taylor, who runs the Phenom camps out in San Diego. You know, these national camps that, like, you know, NBA guys kind of go to when they're young. And someone was bringing them out. So I was like, well, can I go over there and help you guys out? You know, I was just interested in just learning more about coaching and getting into it. And came out, and we brought, you know, six or seven of our guys to be in this camp. And, him and I really hit it off, you know, just had a, he's a California guy too. So, we just kind of hit it off and had just had the same kind of philosophies and thinkings, and, just, you know, created kind of a friendship. And then he really became like a mentor for me, to kind of, you know, teach me a lot about what coaching and things like that. And, he had actually been involved with the pump tournaments in LA for a long time. And so he was basically kind of running those tournaments, and, he said, hey, you know, there's some talent out here. Why don't you bring AAU team out? You know, cause he'd seen some of the players. And I was like, okay. Like, you know, when I was in California, we're in the middle of California, you know, around Fresno is where I grew up. You know, it was only the top players around there were playing AAU, you know, when I was going through school. So it was like, and I hadn't been in, you know, the States for some time, you know, didn't know how much it had blown up. And, so that first summer, so it would have been like, 8 years ago now. So it was 2014. We got 11 kids together, all but two were from international school or base schools. And we had two Japanese kids that came with us. And we got destroyed. Like, we just got throttled, you know, going to LA, went to double pump for just one weekend. And even on that team we had, I mean, one of the kids, the kid that was from St. Mary's, he went Division III. He went to Santa Cruz. Another kid that went NAIA to Vanguard. Another kid that went to Fayetteville, D2. He was a little bit younger then. So we had, like, these college players, and some of them ended up becoming pros. But we just had no clue what we were getting into, you know, because being in Japan and kind of the international community that we were in, at that point, we hadn't done anything outside with Japanese basketball. It was just all kind of within the international school. You know, these guys thought they were big time, you know, and I just like, okay, you guys, yeah, you're pretty good. So it was a pretty steep learning curve for me, you know, and the amount of notes I took afterwards about, like, the things that we were just, you know, needed to just get better at. And so we kind of continued on that, and I was just, you know, still coaching high school basketball and doing my job. But then, you know, the next thing comes around, I'm like, let's get these guys together. Let's create another team. And the next year we took out two teams, you know, 15U and a 17U. And that year, a 17U was much more competitive. We were much more competitive. So we were able to, you know, at least be you know, in games and in a position to try to win games. 15U was not. They were just getting smashed, but it was okay for us. Like, it was, this is about development, you know. And so after that first summer or second summer, someone from the Japanese community emails a couple schools in me and says, hey, the under 16 national team wants to play. They want to play Americans. Can you play? And I was waiting for our varsity coach to say yes or no. And then I knew another school, and I just, you know, so I replied back to this guy, and I just said, yeah, I got a club team. I'll bring some guys out, you know. And for us, like, we hadn't done a lot of practicing. All our practicing came in April, May, June, just to get ready for the summer. And then we played in July and then came home and like, all right, we're good. Wasn't like a year round club or anything like that. So we got some kids together. And at that point we had some pretty good talent. And one of the kids ended up being, he was a 6'9" kid that had played soccer at St. Mary's High School. And when I saw him when he first came in, like, my office is right next to admissions office. I said, who's that kid? We need that guy to play basketball. And they're like, no, he plays soccer. What a waste. You know, he's like 6'8", 6'9", what a waste. So I would go up to him in the hallway and be like, hey, you need to play basketball. If you play basketball, I know nothing. It's like, if you play basketball, you can be on the national team. That's how, because he's coordinated. And so the kind of backstory with him is that there's a big rivalry, like American kind of, you know, not really packed gym, but like our gym holds like maybe 600, 700 people. And American school versus St. Mary's is like the big rivalry. And there's 700 people in there. And so it's loud and raucous and kind of that American atmosphere. And he said he watched that game. And he's like, at that point, he's like, I want to play basketball. Like, this looks like it's fun. So I ended up taking him and our other players. And, you know, my thinking was, we're playing Japan's under 16 national team. Like, these guys have got to be phenomenal. Like, they're going to just destroy us. So I'm happy if we're within 40. You know, that's just like, got to be it. And in that game, you know, 3 minutes to go, and we're down 7. And I was just like, I was shocked. I'm like, how is this possible that this is supposed to be? And all of our kids were 16 years old. You know, how is it possible that we're this close? You know, and before that game, I said to the coach, I said, you know, we brought probably 11 guys. And I said, this guy, they're all Japanese. They're all, most of them are half, right? They're biracial, whether, you know, African or African-American or American. I said, they're all biracial, but, you know, no one knew who they were because they're in this international community. And the 6'9" kid, he's like, who's that guy? And I said, well, that's Avi Schaefer. You know, he just started playing basketball like 6 months ago. And they ended up, they said, hey, let's play again. So we played again a month or two later. And they ended up picking up Avi to play on the under 18 national team. And then he ended up playing in the under 19 worlds with Rui Hachimura. And it was with that group. And that's kind of where we started a little bit getting involved with Japanese basketball. Like, at that point, we weren't involved at all. And so, you know, fast forward, you know, over the time, we, you know, at one summer, we brought like 30 kids. We bring like three teams there. And, you know, the COVID year, we're going to bring 40 kids over. It just, we could just start to see, like, you know, around that time, Rui, right, 2 years after that, Rui's getting drafted. And he was playing Gonzaga and getting drafted. And then you have Yuta Watanabe going from George Washington, getting into kind of the G League. And, you know, you can just start to see, like, basketball start to grow in Japan and more people interested. When I came here, there's not a lot of basketball parks that you can go to. But I would never see kids carrying a ball around or, you know, that look like they're ready to go play basketball. But now it's like, it's not, I mean, it's more common for sure than it was before. And so you can kind of see just how the sport is completely grown, and there's just so much more interest in it. And so part of like our original mission for us as a club was, we want to try to get these players to the U.S. to play in college. So our guy that went to UC Santa Cruz, you know, that was kind of our first one to kind of help him out. And I just helped him out because he was at our school. You know, we started, you know, just, I was doing, you know, just sending out emails to everyone and, hey, come check out this kid. I don't know what the level he's at. And, you know, I kind of had an idea. But over the years, we were just kind of able to, you know, get a few more kids, and then our guy Avi ended up going to Brewster to play there for prep school. And then he ended up walking on at Georgia Tech and was there. And he just came to visit today. Like, he came to practice, to kind of tell our kids a little bit about our story, and, you know, because the kids were asking, like, how he got there. And in obvious case, he ended up leaving after halfway through his sophomore year to come back to play Japan to play pro because he wanted to play in the Olympics. He wanted to qualify for that, which he ended up doing. He played in the last Olympics. So again, going back to our, our kind of our mission is just like, we've been just trying to, and for myself, just really trying to, touch base with coaches and, show that, just the type of talent that's out there, that's coming from Japan. And as I said, as the sport is growing, there's going to be more and more of these athletes coming out, and last year was kind of a big deal because, Casey Tominaga, who was at Ranger College, played at Nebraska last year and playing high major basketball, and that there's some real interest in what's happening as far as, players being interested, and now other players becoming more interested in actually going to the U.S. to play, and that's what we're trying to help that process.
For sure. Yeah. Great story. Great insights on kind of how it's grown and it's going to continue to grow. So how could the Rising Coaches community or anyone listening or people in America help you grow? I mean, you talked about networking through your mass blast emails, and those get hit or miss and they kind of get buried, or, a lot of slides. Cause when I'm a junior college coach, and not to discredit junior college in any way, shape or form, we at least have some scholarship money to give, but For me, I get 15 to 20 of these a day, whether via email, direct message to our Ellsworth account, or direct message to my personal Twitter or Facebook or anything. And, that's kind of wild to think, like, a lot of them just get slid and delete, slide, delete, slide, delete. Yeah. And so how can we help you? How can we help grow Japanese basketball, especially at the youth and prep level?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like it's just being open to, I would guess that 3/4 of Rising Coaches has gotten something from me. Like, I've sent out so many emails to, I'm sure, and I understand, and to me it's the odds of, how can I make this subject appealing enough, or what can I put in here that's appealing enough. And I think it's like throwing darts a little bit of trying to, like, just see where it might land. And, I've gotten lucky, and, like I said, like, some of it has actually been because of Rising Coaches and because, like, I just form relationships with, like, the 2 coaches a month or, like, whatever was posted or something like that. Those are some of, like, my go-to guys now. Like, I'll just kind of text them. It's like, hey, I got a kid. What do you think? Yeah, maybe not here, but I got a JUCO, right? That might be looking for him. And is he willing to go JUCO, or is he willing to go prep school, or is he willing to, and that kind of, again, takes another step in the network of creating another link in the chain of, someone else that might be able to help, our kids kind of get that exposure. That's just a lot of it. It's just that, the kids that, and that's why we bring kids out there to the U.S. is just to give them an exposure. And I know a lot of coaches, like, it's hit or miss, like, for us where we go to play. Sometimes, like, Double Pump was great when it was going, but that's gone. What's the next one for us to go to? I mean, we're going to Hoop Group this summer because we're just trying to find that next place to go that's going to kind of give ourselves some exposure and give the kids kind of a look, and I also know that, budgets are limited, or, number of coaches going out is limited. And so we film every game and we put it together, and we'll put a tape together for our kids, that they can send out or I can send out and try to get them at least seen, or, you know, at least recognize that, you know, that someone can see and that might be at the level or that's at a need. I mean, to be honest with you, coming out of Japan, there's not a lot of, often not a lot of height, you know, which is kind of difficult to kind of, you got a lot of these five point guards, well, dime a dozen, right? So what's going to set these kids apart? And that's what I think, you know, for like the Japanese kids and Japanese basketball, I mean, there are some things that are going to set them apart just because oftentimes they're quicker than most of the guards that are out there, and their defense is really, really good, because it's one of the, like, kind of the staples of Japanese basketball is that the on-ball defense, and oftentimes the shooting is pretty good. But if you haven't actually seen that type of player before, you know, you go 5'10", 5'10", 1'6", you kind of move on, you know, and then so we try to, at least when we put tape together, to highlight some of the things that they can do that's going to be a little bit more of a separator for them. So, I mean, as rising coaches, I mean, it's just like being open to it, or, you know, at least connecting with people like me, because I know there's people outside of us, like me, right? We're trying to get our kids seen and just being open to it, you know, because, I mean, I think there is a little bit of not a big gold mine, but there's a mine that's going to, you know, it's going to start to kind of blow up a little bit, because more and more kids here are becoming more and more interested, you know, and it's across, you know, all levels. We're not just looking for kids when you want, you know, we're happy if they do. And I think in the last 2 years, there have been 7 that are going to D1 from Japan. And we've been involved with 6 of them. But most of our kids aren't that. We're looking at D2, D3, JUCO, you know, whatever it is. Like, our kids are just, you know, wanting that a chance to play. And, you know, and that's what we're trying to provide them.
Yeah, opportunity is everything. Like you talked about, the supply and demand. You know, your supply is, you know, supply and demand are both growing. And so hopefully you can continue to build your program. We're going to kind of flip a switch here. So you have a unique background that not all coaches have. You have a counseling background. How have you utilized your trainings through, you know, psychological and counseling and other things to help you not only in coaching, but also building a, you know, your own brand and company, in essence, with your club team?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes they don't go together. I mean, right? Because as a counselor, you want to be calm. You want to be really, like, not calculating, but really, like, listening and empathetic. And I mean, I think it's really benefited me in building relationships with some of the kids and parents and things like that. But, you know, I'm a human being too. So, like, you get angry and you kind of, like, you know, kind of explode because things aren't going the way they go. And that's not really my personality anyway. Like, as a coach, I'm not like a fiery go, you know, curse some kid out kind of thing. You know, I think it goes along with being a counselor. But, you know, I think it's been, like, super useful to me to kind of, you know, think about what motivates players, you know, because we're talking about individuals, right? And individual players and thinking deeper of, you know, what is going to push them a little bit more, or trying to read it a little bit better of, you know, what's the nonverbals that are going on, you know, rather than just like, this is my way or the highway and just keep on going through, you know, what is the atmosphere that's going on, you know, that within each individual player, but within each, as the team itself. You know, I wish I could say I'm really good at being able to do the counseling with the coaching. You know, and I know for myself, that's the thing that I constantly try to get on myself, because I know I like to just, I get so involved in, like, play after play, you know, and moment after moment, you know, and not always taking a step back, and looking at the whole picture here of what's going on. And it's something that, you know, I try to remind myself in games, just, you know, I feel like I'm just, like, barking out orders all the time and really need to step back, you know, and then start to analyze a little bit better. But, you know, for me, I feel like it's just the counseling background has been super useful for me. You know, like I said, to connect with players and, you know, having that outside of the basketball time, know, that ability to just talk with kids and find out more about their story. And you know, I think I was actually having a conversation with one of our assistant coaches about that, about just how, you know, as players that we grew up, our coaches were just kind of like there and coached you and gone, you know, and that how kind of now it's, there's more to it. And there is, like, you know, that's been talked about, that the mental health aspects of things and you know, how, you know, our, you know, the players' bodies need rest, but their minds need rest, that they do need a break. I mean, we had a kid that was playing prep school, and he came back and was, you know, was having a bit of a hard time. And, you know, that's the conversation I'm having with him then. It's like, yeah, you need a break. You know, you need to step back. It's like, it's okay to not pick up a basketball for 2 weeks. I mean, that's okay. You know, it's not like your basketball is done because you did that. It's like, you need that time to step back away from, you know, the pressures that you're feeling and get yourself right. And I think there, you know, I hope as, you know, as coaches, I know that's my background, you know, but I hope that's something that, you know, more coaches can kind of just be aware of.
Rest and relaxation to recharge. If you empty your tank every day and you're not recharging your tank, you're gonna run out of gas in more ways than one, like you said, mentally, physically, emotionally, you name it. As you continue to help get, you know, Japanese kids over to America, or as you see maybe American, you know, kids coming back and forth, or being far from home, or, you know, having challenges with culture, or I'm about to coach, you know, a kid that's from Japan, I'm really excited about getting him over here. You know, what are some things when his English isn't the best, and there's, you don't have, it's not always going to be a vocal relationship because there's going to be challenges there. And, you know, being halfway across the world, give us, you know, what have you noticed in trying to balance those cultural differences, and especially the English barrier? I mean, you talked about it a little bit yourself when you first went over to Japan and trying to, you know, learn Japanese again, or I guess learn it for the first time in essence, but your English was very stellar. So, you know, talk a little bit about that.
Food. I know our kids that go over there, they get so excited when their parents send them food. You know, in a case of like your player coming over there, I would go scout out the Japanese restaurants that are close by. And I'm being serious. Like it is, there's such a big difference between diet in the US and diet in Japan. And I would probably say like, it's probably similar to whatever country the kids are coming from, is, you know, they miss that. And they talk about dorm food, and then oftentimes, like, the conversation I'll have with those kids is like, how's it going there? Oh, it's good. I don't like the food. It's greasy. Because Japanese food is very healthy. And lots of rice. So they eat rice. I mean, it's a staple here. So it's eating rice every day. So I think that's a great way to connect and you know, get kids to feel comfortable, because I think that's what they miss a lot. I know languages, and it's difficult if you're in a place that doesn't have another kid that speaks the same language, you know, and it's trying to, you know, say for Japan, it's, you know, it's halfway across the world, you know, that it is a little bit difficult to actually communicate with people on the other side of the world, you know, when you're over there. So, I mean, it's for them, I think, as well, you know, and they're going to do it, but, you know, having them check in at home and having checking in with their friends and things like that. You know, I think one of the things that they also struggle with is, you know, when can they get home, you know, and the holidays that are at school, where do they go? You know, and the programs that our kids have gone to, they've been really good about finding them places to go for Christmas or Thanksgiving, or somewhere. You know, some of them have family that's not, might be around, but I think that's really important. You know, they have somewhere to go, and they feel like, you know, that they're in a community that cares about them. It's not like they're left in their dorms. I mean, we've had that, you know, where kids have been basically left in their dorms, in certain places because there's no one that could take them. So I think that's really, you know, an important aspect for, you know, these, international kids. But for the most part, I mean, we haven't had too many kids who are like super homesick. They don't want to, they're done. They don't want to do anymore. They came to play basketball and that's what they want to do. But the, you know, I think, you know, the language is hard and it is stressful for them, right? Cause it's like, you think you're sitting in the classroom where you understand half of what they're saying, you know, some of them, right? And it's like, it becomes hard to, you have to sit there all day listening to this language that you're, you know, barely know. Cause I can imagine, you know, I probably know as much Japanese as they know English, a lot of these kids, and, you know, sit there and it's like really having to concentrate, on what's being said and just how taxing that is, you know. And I know for them, like getting in the basketball court is just like a relief in a sense, like, ah, you know, there's something I know, you know, I might not know what you're saying to me, but basketball is it's a world language, you know, they can figure it out once they watch it. And I would say like Japanese players, like we have them in our program. Like we coach in English. We have most of our players are bilingual, or a good amount of our players are bilingual. So if there needs to be some kind of translation on the spot, they could do it. We have staff that can translate. But they're really good at just picking it up real quick about, hey, let's do this. And I'll say it and then you show it. And they go, okay, they get it. And they can just move on. So that's something that I've been really pleased with. And it's different than our international players. They don't listen as well. They're just not quite as good listeners and kind of like they wait for someone else to repeat it again or something like that. And the Japanese kids, it's like one time, and it's part of the Japanese basketball culture.
Interesting. Yeah. Food's the heart and soul, huh? So,
oh yeah, 100%.
Food and making them feel like it's a home and family and like anything when you're taking a bunch of, you know, young men or wherever you're coaching from different areas, different backgrounds, and you got to make them one family. I think that's
right.
The key to building a big time program. And hopefully we can do that here. And I appreciate your insight on that topic. Is there anything specific, you know, that I should have asked you that I haven't so far? Is there anything that you would, you know, any questions I haven't asked that I should?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm happy to actually. One of the things I think is interesting is just like people, you know, actually Japanese basketball. You know, Japanese basketball is you know very different than American basketball, right? American basketball is you play for your high school team from say November till March, and then from March through maybe October, you're playing club basketball. You know, and who knows? Maybe you're switching teams in the fall. I don't know. And that's just kind of the cycle that goes round and round and round. But Japanese basketball is year round. So you play for high school, you play for your high school team as you enter as a freshman. Well, there's 3 years in high school, so it'd be a sophomore, but, and that's what you do. And kind of what happens is there's these powerhouse Japanese, high school teams that recruit, right? They'll go around and they'll try to, or kids will, I guess, send them film or try to drop into practice, something like that. And those like high level teams, they practice all the time and they practice 3 hours, 4 hours, two practices. They just constantly practice. You know, so the ongoing kind of joke is, you know, they practice 370 days out of the year because they practice so much. You know, there's not a lot of downtime. And in reality, like we had one of our kids that played in one of the schools and he's like, yeah, I probably practice like 350 days or some kind of basketball activity. Like they just constantly, and that's just kind of the culture, sport culture here. You know, you hear about these baseball players that have thrown thousands and thousands of pitches, you know, as high school players and their arms have thrown as many pitches as professionals or things like that. Right. There's just this kind of desire for perfection, you know, and that kind of, and the drills will be the same drills over and over. So we'll go into a gym and there'll be they call it mini basket, right? Like, under 12 and no coach. They'll run the practice themselves because they know exactly the drills they're going to run and they'll run them. There's no messing around. They'll run them to perfection. They'll just keep running them. And then one of the leaders will go, okay, we're moving on. Now, it's not always the case, but that's, I mean, you know, that's what we've seen is that they know what to do and they won't mess around. They'll just do the drill, you know, and so they're you know, they can do these things with precision, which is very different from the type of players that we have, right? Our international players are basically like American, you know, most of them are American. And it's just like, you know, if you're not paying attention to them, they're gonna start goofing around kind of stuff like that age. Or they're talking or the things like that. Japanese kids at practice never talk. Right. It's this yes, coach kind of stuff all the time. So I, you know, later on, I'll be really interested to hear kind of your feedback of like how, you know, your player is, you know, just kind of how he is, you know, and depending on where the coach that they have, there are some younger coaches coming in, but there's a lot of older, like long in the tooth coaches, and they're old school military style barking orders. Yes, coach kind of, things. And, not always saying the nicest thing to their players. You know, very old school military kind of style. And it's very, to me, it's very fascinating, right, to kind of see it. And I think that's a little bit where some, maybe the appeal of Japanese players coming to our program is because we're just not like that. There's so much variety with us, and there is some, you know, talking about, you know, relationships and things like that. So it is very different culture that happens.
It's fascinating to even think that, you know, you just have the awareness to understand and recognize that. And I couldn't even envision, you know, yeah, we might do a few drills the same every day, but you got to change it up because they're going to get bored. And we don't do drills just to do them. We're very practical in what we're doing, but it's so unique that that's how it's done. And it's continuing to be done that way. But, you know, like you said, there's younger guys or people like yourself that have that awareness and understand there's more to it than just the business aspect of, hey, just become a phenomenal listener, but there's the best of both worlds there too. So, you know, it'll be, I'm excited to get Bruce over here and coach him, but I'm very uniquely intrigued by, you know, the different things. And I'm going to ask him a lot of questions.
I'm actually curious. I'm actually curious because one of the cultures here in Japan is when you sub out, they bow when they go off the court. And I'm going to be interested if he keeps doing that once he gets there.
Maybe our whole team will start bowing. It'll be awesome.
Because one of the kids I know, he's going to Northern Illinois. I think he's going to continue it on because he still does it. And he was doing it at St. Thomas More still. And I'd be curious if he still does it. I think he will.
The uniqueness of the respect that goes beyond it. Now, have you noticed with that, when they're upset or angry or have, you know, that emotion, do they still do that?
There is no emotion.
It's going to be some emotion. You talked about how fun the environment is.
I'm over exaggerating, but yeah, there's, you know, they try to keep it in check a lot. You know, and that's the kind of the discussion that we have with our players, the Japanese players that are there. It's like, come on, you got to show me something. You know, it's just stoic, you know, stone faced. I'm like, man, you got to give me something. Like, I don't know what you're feeling. I don't know what you're thinking, because it's just like, you know, just how they are. And not all the kids are like that for sure. Like, there is some emotion, right? They make some big plays and they get all, you know, hyped about it. You know, one of the interesting things is that pregame's great. Pregame's awesome in Japanese schools. They're chanting and going and all together and saying the same things. And you know, the bench decorum's kind of the same. Everyone's right all together. But, you know, you go higher and, you know, it's like one of the national team coaches are. They do all this chanting and cheering, but you get them on the court, they don't do it. There's no more talking. So again, it's just a fascinating kind of culture that's here. And, you know, it's foreign to me. I mean, I'm Japanese, but it's foreign to me because I never grew up with it. But some of that stuff, I was like, yeah, this would go well in the States too. If you can get them all kind of chanting together and doing some kind of, not cheer, but just saying the same things together and getting them going. And, to be honest with you, it intimidated some of our guys. you know, it's kind of like the New Zealanders doing their little, you know, their little rugby dance. Yeah, that chant is because, you know, they're bringing in, say, 30 kids. Like in a lot of the sports, they don't cut kids. It's like a club. So they all come and they're all chanting. And that's why they have like some of these 3-4 hour practices, because they just have so many kids in the program. But it did intimidate some of our kids, the younger ones, because they're just like, what is this? Like, this is so, you know, and the gym's just loud because they're all together in unison doing the same stuff. So there's definitely some, you know, some things that, you know, that I wish I could take away. I haven't gotten the courage yet to do that with our guys and get them to do that yet.
You got to get it on film and share that, you know, in some capacity of understanding, you know, not necessarily a documentary, but the understanding, especially as they come over here. Like, I'm sure they see what, you know, American basketball looks like between the NBA and what's emphasized and popularized and, you know, on social media platforms, especially.
Yeah.
What they see a skated truth of what it is, but at the same time, they see almost the negative things that come about it. And, you know, just learning, I think it is just teaching others what you do and what's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, you know, helping others understand is extremely important. All right. As we kind of wrap up here, give us a 24-hour challenge as a coach, counselor, as a director, you do it all. Give us kind of a 24-hour challenge as, you know, coaches in our profession.
Yeah. Like, to me, it's like, you know, who can you connect with, you know, this week, you know, who, you know, and to be honest with you, within our program, we have a lot of guys and we don't have a lot of coaches. And that's our discussion within ourselves is, you know, how do we connect with each individual? You know, and I think that's so important. I know we all know that, but how do we get it to a deeper level? You know, it's not just the surface of how's school, how's your girlfriend, but how do you get deeper, you know, and what are some ways to do that? And what are the types of questions you ask to get there? You know, and, you know, as you build deeper relationships with the kids, the more you can get out of them, because, you know, if you keep it shallow, it's just going to stay shallow, you know, and how do you, I mean, I think we're all invested in our kids, you know, to some level we're invested in them, but how do we kind of, take it to another level and, you know, show that we really care about what's going on with them, you know? And I think, you know, some of the kids that we deal with are pretty guarded, you know, just their backgrounds and where they come from. And, you know, how do you kind of spend quality time, you know, and what is quality time for them? You know, what is quality time for each individual? Because sometimes it's not just sitting down and talking with them. And, you know, it's kind of like those love languages, right? It's like, I know that we'll want to, as adults, just sit down and talk, but that might not be what they need or what they desire, you know, whatever it is, you know, that's going to kind of get them to come out. You know, so, I know it's an ongoing challenge for me. It's like how to build those relationships with individual players. And, you know, I always feel like I need to get better at it. You know, I know that's my first career. But it's something that, like, I feel like that just has to, you know, show them how much you care about them and, you know, and what does that look like? So, yeah, that'd be my challenge for sure. I mean, it's my own challenge. You know, and I think, you know, as we get into talking, you know, more, you know, as we, you know, it's come up in sports, just that the mental health part, you know, and at what point is it beyond my capabilities? You know, are there things here deeper that needs actual professional help? And if I can't provide that, how can I find a place to provide that for them? I mean, it's not all the time. We're not always dealing with those types of situations, but I think we do need to be cognizant of them, you know, cause there is a lot of pressure. And I mean, we're all on social media, but I don't think, you know, we didn't grow up as teenagers on social media. And there's a ton of pressure on those kids to make themselves look great and, you know, show that everything's fine. And, you know, that I got this offer, or I got this and I got this going on and I'm scoring this. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them to please their audience. And, you know, it's a difficult place, I think, to navigate. And then, you know, I don't have the answers to those, you know, like that is, to me, one of the more difficult things to deal with kids is, you know, just in my career is the social media aspect of, their lives are constantly online and constantly being seen, and someone's videotaping them or taking pictures of them, and or whatever it is, or they're doing it to themselves, you know. And I try to stay away from as much as possible, because I know, to me, I don't find it to be terribly healthy. But I, you know, as a person that runs a program, I have to be, you know. And so anyway, sorry, I went off on a whole nother time.
That was probably the deepest part of our whole conversation. I think it's important to even note, you know, that you made a really interesting point, is that a lot of us coaches, we did not grow up with those pressures publicly. So we may have had them or inflicted them on ourselves or with our parents or our upbringing, but we didn't have it outside. You could get away. You know, yeah, people may make fun at recess, but now it's not just at recess. It's everywhere. And everything, like you said, is filmed, and it brings a whole nother level to, you know, what another thing that young people have to balance. And it's, you know, even gone into parents too, because, you know, they're learning how to parent their kids, but as well as the lives that they live, they want their kid to be perceived as the best on social media as well. And, you know, what we emphasize and what we prioritize right now in our societies may not be the right thing, rather than just being present in the moment of what we're trying to do. You can't change the past. You can only influence the future by what you're doing now and today, rather than other stuff, you know. But finding that fine balance is very unique, and you know, it's a good point to make. Have you found anything specific that has helped you? You said, "Oh, I don't have all the answers," but you know, you at least have the awareness of knowing that it's going on. What have you found that has really worked in that specific space?
As far as the
social media, the balance of, you know, perception versus reality, in essence.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I'll, you know, talking with individual kids about it, you can't get them off of it. You can encourage it, right? Because, okay, Snapchat's bad for you. You should get off of it. Well, then, great, coach. All right. You know, they're just going to ignore you and move on. It's like, why would I get off of it? You know, all my friends are there. I get to see what's going on. I get to brag about what my life is like, you know. And I think kind of the message to me is like, there's more to it than that. But then again, you're the old guy. You don't know what it's like, you know? So, it's having conversations with them about it, you know, that there are some pressures with all that stuff. And, you know, but on the flip side, you know, we have kids that are coming back here, you know, that want to become professional. And I'm sure you're dealing with it there with like NIL. You know, if I have X amount of followers, you know, I might get a deal out of this with someone that's going to be interested in, you know, whatever I have, 10,000, 20,000 followers, whatever it is, you know. So again, there's now an additional pressure now that coaches are also have to deal with too, you know. And I know that's not something that's done out here, but it is, like, you know, I had a conversation the other day because one of our kids is coming back to play pro. You know, and I said, you know, now you're in the business aspect of basketball. You know, there are some other things that, you know, that you could get out of it because of your social media presence. You know, so the kids can use it as a means and a tool. You know, but, you know, if they get too far wrapped into it, then we're in trouble. So.
Well, good stuff. Well, I appreciate your time. I know it's late over there, and you, you taking the time to not only be a valuable listener, but also a valuable contributor or networker within our organization. And I want to continue to root you on, and I'm sure we'll be following, you know, your teams as you continue to bring them over to the United States. And what's the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you in some capacity, or, you know, learn more, or, hey, get on that email database of some sort?
You know, sorry, what did you say? Get on the what?
Get on your email blast. We got to get on your email blast.
Yeah, exactly. If you see Tokyo Samurai Basketball, that's me. Just search Tokyo Samurai Basketball in your inbox, and I've probably been there.
Perfect.
Right? That's where we're at. I mean, I'm on Twitter. Like, myself, again, I don't post anything about myself. I use, like, our Tokyo Samurai Twitter page. I think it's Tokyo Samurai Basketball AU. I think it was my, what it be. If you search Tokyo Samurai Basketball, you'll see us. You know, Instagram, same thing. I'm on Facebook for myself, you know, if you want to find me as a person and want to connect there. But I'll be honest with you, you probably could search my email and it's probably going to pop up at some point. We use Sports Recruits as a means to communicate with coaches. And I forgot what the number of emails was in that or connected, either emails or connected coaches I've had through that. I'm going to continue to do it. So if you haven't gotten an email from me, you might again this summer as we get ready to go travel there in July.
There you go. Well, thanks again for your time. And if you just appreciate all your support.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on. Yep. I appreciate it.